Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand-name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations tonight. It's a treat to have a studio full of very interesting people that we'll introduce as we go along. But we're going to start off with something that we've never done before, with the thousands, yes, literally thousands of guests that have been on Conducting Conversations. Are you ready? Happy birthday to you. See, I started off with a happy birthday song to Val Tutson is here. Valerie, your birthday tomorrow, right?
Yes,
well,
yes,
thank you for
yes.
sharing your time with us and being part of our Conducting Conversations show. Val has been on the show one time before.
Yes.
But almost 15 years ago.
That is so crazy. How does the time fly like that?
Val Tutson is a, can I use the word professional storyteller?
You may. Yes, please.
Yes. And very involved in what's going on right now with an organization called FundaFest, which we're going to explain and find out all about. And Val has brought a couple people with her. First off, we're going to hear from Teju, who is also storyteller, a sculptor, a good-looking guy, very smart, all those things. Was that part of his introduction correct?
That works. I think that works.
All right. So, Val, let's start off a little bit about you. You are a Rhode Island person.
I am a Rhode Island
person.
For
a long time.
For a very long time. You know, I paused a second, Mike, because you know how it is. If you weren't born here and if you didn't go to school with so-and-so's cousin, are you really a Rhode Islander?
Right.
But I have lived here most of my life. I came here when I was 17 years old to go to college, and I've been here ever since.
Okay.
Yeah.
So college was where?
I went to Brown University.
All right. Brown University. Mm-hmm. You're one of those kids in my neighborhood that I yell at.
Exactly.
All the time.
Well, I don't know that I was. You know, part of the reason I stayed was because from my first semester at Brown, I was working in the city of Providence at what had been the Langston Hughes Center for the Arts and Education. And I was teaching drama with the kids from the city of Providence and fell in love with the people here and the community and stayed.
And that led you to becoming a storyteller.
Yes.
Now, there are not a lot of people that can say, hey, I'm a professional storyteller. You know, they're a lumberjack or they're whatever. But not a lot of people that say, that's what I do. And you've been very successful on this. You've had your own television shows. Mm-hmm. You've been on many, many radio programs and involved with lots of festivals. But tell us about this one that we're promoting tonight, FundaFest.
FundaFest, yeah. This is...
did I say it wrong?
Well, you know, it looks like fun, so people want to say Funda, but the actual pronunciation is Funda.
Funda.
Funda, which is a Zulu word from the Zulu people in Southern Africa, South Africa, and it means to learn. And we call our festival the FundaFest, a celebration of Black storytelling. And we started it 26 years ago, which is hard to believe. You know, I think I was still in seventh grade. Could that be?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Just turned 10.
And I had just come back from South Africa, and there was money through the Rhode Island Foundation to create programming to celebrate Black arts and Black artists and community. So I gathered together with Ramona Bass, Cola Bay, and we were sitting at her table. I said, hey, we could get some money, and we could have a Black storytelling festival, and we could bring our friends from around the country and get into the schools and the community. And we thought, what shall we call it? And because I'd been in South Africa, and I saw this art center that was called the Funda Center. We decided to call it Funda because it looks like fun, but it also means to learn. And of course, that's the most ancient way that cultures all over the world have done their learning and teaching, which is through storytelling.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. So that's been running all last week, right?
Yes. We started on January 19th, if you can imagine. We started out, you know, our very first festival was 2.5 days, and now we're 3 weekends long. So our programming has gone from January 19th, and we're going all the way through February 3rd.
Excellent. Okay. So there are things happening as we speak, as a matter of fact, right? There's always something going on during those times.
That's right. This past, we just finished up Sacred Storytelling today, which was really lovely. And that was at the Impact Stage, which is a new Black Run Theater in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, where one of our RIBS members, Melody Thompson, actually
runs. Explain RIBS.
Thank you. Yeah. Rhode Island Black Storytellers, otherwise known as RIBS.
Okay. Not to be confused with Wes's Rib House.
And, you know, one day we're going to get around to doing this fundraising idea of a barbecue sauce, you know, a contest.
There you go. All right. Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, but we did that. We also had a night that was celebrating the art of storytelling in hip hop. So we just finished that program with Master Ace, who also went to URI, by the way. So he came back and did a night, the art of storytelling in hip hop, with another local artist named Acrobatic and Project 401, which does breakdancing, and just a real celebration of hip hop culture. And a little bit after the 50 years of the anniversary of hip hop. And then we had our family fun day all day on Saturday.
Not a fun day.
Fun day. Not a fun day. We had a fun day. Okay. We had a fun day at the Funda Fest over in Pawtucket. And kids performed. So we were really excited that this was the second time that we had youth performers take the stage as well.
Excellent. Well, let's take a moment to introduce your guest that you brought with you.
Yes.
And we're not going to say his last name because I'll mess it up. But Teju, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here. And this is one of the favorite places in this country. I've been here a lot, and I enjoy being here. And I've known these people when they were very young. And no, that's quite true.
It is so true.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm happy to be here, too. The other thing about it is this area of the country is an area that I was absolutely unfamiliar with. And I've been like in a lot of different states, but not up in this area until the Johnny Cake Storytelling. Was that the first time I came here?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. That's when then I realized, oh, those quaint little provinces that I heard about, et cetera, et cetera, and jolly New England and all that. I'm like, wow, it looks like the postcards. You know? So,
now, where were you coming from?
Well, I live in Milwaukee.
Okay.
I was born in Kansas and partially raised in Arkansas.
All right.
Of course, I lived in an area in Kansas that had originally been settled by black people way back when people were leaving captivity. I don't use the term slavery because that's an incorrect term. Slavery implies a mental condition, okay? Like you can be a slave to love, okay? You know, and Patti LaBelle sang, I'm under your spell, I don't want to break free. You can make a slave out of me. That's what a slave is. But a captive always tries to break free, which is what we people of African descent did in this country, consistently trying to break free. So I never, ever use the word slavery unless we're talking about something which is probably X-rated that you don't want on your radio program right now. But the point being is that I think the necessity of precision in speaking, because it implies too much to say the word slave.
Right.
It implies like somebody that's downtrodden or, you know, something like that. And there's no way that the word slave can be a good word in terms of defining people or describing people. It's not a word that has ever been used to say something positive about anyone. So we have never been slaves. We have only been captives, always trying to break free.
What a great point.
Yeah.
Great point.
Then that's why I think, you know, and pardon me for going on about that.
That's all right.
But as a storyteller, I want to tell a story so we don't look in the past and think that there was something weak or something that we as African people in the United States could not do. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. No, Abraham Lincoln didn't. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't, and pardon me for going on. But the thing about it is that he was losing, the North was losing the Civil War, and then what happened is they needed somebody to help. So what happened then was, well, look here, there's all of these people that can help, right? But Abraham Lincoln was told, if you want our help, you have to somehow make something happen that ends it totally. So that's when he started talking about the 13th Amendment, which ends slavery. Then, no, we're still not going to fight. We're not going to fight until you make sure that it is passed. So that's when he goes to the Senate and starts making, as I would, you know, those eloquent speeches to get them to pass it. And once it was passed, that was when we African people in America joined. OK, and that was what gave the first victory. OK, during the Civil War, in the Battle of Antietam. And that was what changed everything. And then African people in the United States said, no, we're not going to fight against, you know, the separation of the states. We're not going to fight against secession unless you pass a law that says it's illegal. So then once we win, that means all of our people in the southern states or in the Confederacy will be affected by this law. So that's why we're going to go beat the Confederacy, so that it will all be the United States and there will no longer be the thing called legal captivity and legal unpaid labor that we are suffering. So that was really, pardon me for going on like that, not so, but that's really what happened. See, well, so then that is important. That's why you never hear me important. Say the word slave. That's right. You know,
it's certainly worth the time.
But there was a beautiful lady one time, and you know, I'm like, I could be her slave, but that's another story.
But you see, Mike, time. Why Teju has been one of our storytellers from the very beginning.
Right.
And in fact, when I first got interested in storytelling and found the National Association of Black Storytellers, I walked into a hotel lobby and Teju and two other men were there just talking. And I thought, oh my God, this, you know, I didn't get this in school. I never got these perspectives, certainly when I was growing up and even in parts of my college and graduate education, you know. So that's why the storytelling and bringing people like Teju and people from all over the world has been a key part to what we do with this festival.
Excellent. Well, we have an example of one of the people, I was going to say performers. Do they like being called performers? Or
Sure. I don't know. Well,
okay.
Yeah, you know, they're performers, they're professional. David Gonzalez. So one of the other things that we always try to do at Funda Festival is to acknowledge and present the diversity of African descended people around the world. So we know that in addition to folks, you know, literally coming from the continent or being born here, African descended, that our people are in the Caribbean, in all the cultures of the Caribbean and South America, and that there's a mix of our African and Latino cultures and traditions. And David Gonzalez is a poet and a musician and a storyteller. And we were so thrilled to have him. And this is one of the stories that he tells. Actually, it's an older CD, but it's just a really lovely.
From his CD. We'll listen to that. We'll take a short break and we'll be back with more.
The ceiba tree drops roots from its branches, and its smooth gray bark grows out and reaches to surround these new shoots and include them into the trunk, like the place above the wrist where ligament and vein expose their fragile weaving beneath the translucence of skin. In Quebradillas, Puerto Rico, there are a pair of thick ceiba trees which live on the narrow grass divider between the eastbound and westbound arteries of Ruta 2. their canopy shades the comings and goings of San Juaneros, campesinos, retirees, locos, turistas, and second-generation New Yorkicans like me, who hunger for a bit of the island's dirt and a taste of our own history. In 1927, a branch split off from my family's tree when Lupe y Rafael left Borinquen, Puerto Rico, to grow their leaves in the greener pastures of New York City. Trees do grow in Brooklyn and the Bronx, though the seedlings have to fight their way through the cracks in the cement and learn to dance quickly to avoid the heel falls that shake the pavement all around. This branch prospered. Their great-grandchildren visit the Spanish language now as if it were any other. Their grandchildren, now middle-aged, negotiate the waters between islands of safety and islands of risk. Their children are pensioners, and they are happy to watch the sunset from any horizon. But in Quebradillas, Charcas y Isabela, the roots remain intact and in touch with the limestone earth that erodes the landscape into sky-reaching forested hills and obscure valleys, which are the wombs of histories. The church that my great-great-grandfather built on the edge of the family's farm still stands, a sign welcoming parishioners. Misa, domingo a las once, is painted in rough pink letters against the background of pale blue, and the silent crucifix on its roof calls attention to the sky. At each cousin's house, I am welcomed with rice and beans, mangoes, oranges, rum, stories, and old sepia-toned photos. With each loving word, I drop roots. With each gripping hug, I drop roots. With each stroking hand, I drop roots that are embraced by my family. Hochi, Elisa, Francis, Ernesto, who stayed close to the ceiba trees and know the secret of their wrappings.
Fundafest, or Fundafest as I called it incorrectly, is the subject of tonight's Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Maino, very pleased to be sitting with Val and Teju as we talk about things going on in the beautiful state of Rhode Island for this festival. And Val, I'm going to let you pick it up because I know you know all the details because you've been doing this for a while.
I have been doing it for a while. And what's fun is even though a lot of things are the same, there's always something new. So this Thursday, we have what we call Community Flavors. And that's an opportunity for anybody who wants to come and join us. We're going to have Jamaican food. We're celebrating Jamaica because one of our invited guests is Amina Blackwood Meeks. She is a cultural icon in Jamaica, and she is our featured artist that night. We're doing this in partnership with the Jamaican Association of Rhode Island, and that's really fun. So people can come, they'll tell their own stories, and then she and another Jamaican poet, Amaziah, will be our featured artist that night, and that's on Thursday.
Okay.
And then on Friday, we have our infamous Liars Contest, and dare I let Teju say anything at all about what happens at the Liars Contest?
Tell us, Teju. Go ahead.
First of all, let me just say this. Though I'm often involved in the Liars Contest, I never tell lies. I think it's absolutely abhorrent to even think about telling lies.
But you've won the contest before.
Yes. Now you see.
He's got the what trophies had, to
like
to
the
prove
kids
it.
Say, what had happened was okay. No, but the liars contest. It's like all the prevaricators, the ne'er-do-wells, the liars. They come together to lie. And I was always taught as a young man that one of the things is if you go to a party, party with the people who gave the party. So as a result, I forced myself to tell lies at the liars contest. And unfortunately, I won. And I feel really, really morally stricken about winning the liars contest.
You can tell how bad he feels. But anyway, what we no, love but what is that.
But here's the thing about the liars contest. It's a lot of fun. Oh, I mean, I like over the years, it's a lot of fun. People come and they tell some of the most ridiculous things that have ever been told. Okay?
There you go.
You get to tell before a panel of judges for cash prizes. So it's really, really fun.
And that's Friday.
That's Friday, February 2nd. We'll be at the Cape Verdean Club in East Providence. We also have a special judge coming, Dr. Khalila Ali, who is the former wife of Muhammad Ali. Oh. And she's going to be in town promoting a book. And so she's agreed to be one of our judges. So come on out.
All right. Well, now we want to get to a recording that was made quite a few years ago by Valerie. I guess I'll let you set this up. It's about 6-7 minutes long, so let's get to it.
Well, we're heading into talking about our Black History Day, and this is one of my favorite stories from the time of the Underground Railroad. And I guess that's enough of what I'll say. Hopefully I didn't say the word slave or enslavement or something, but I probably did. However, the story is about our resilience.
All right, we'll give that a listen. We'll be back with more.
It was around about 1830 or 1831. And there was a man by the name of Tice Davids. He was a slave in Kentucky. Now, Kentucky was and still is right up against the Ohio River. And everybody knew all you had to do was get across that river and you would be free. Tice used to dream about freedom. He wanted freedom so badly he could taste it. He just wasn't sure how he was going to get it. And then one day, when all the slaves had finished their work in the fields, they were getting ready to go and get their food. But Tice decided he wasn't hungry for food. He was starving for freedom, so he would find a way. When everybody walked in one direction, Tice began to walk in the opposite direction. Then he got down on his hands and his knees and he started to crawl through the fields. And when he got to the edge of the fields, he stood up and he started to run towards the river. As soon as Tice started to run, he was thinking about all the stories people whispered in the slave cabins at night. Some people said, if you found the right place at the river, there would be people on both sides who would carry you across to freedom. Some people even said there was a boat waiting to take you to the other side. And that's what Tice was thinking about as he started to run. Unfortunately, as soon as he began running, the overseer saw him. Hey, come back here! When Tice heard that, his heart started to beat faster. And because his heart was pumping, he moved his arms and his legs faster than he ever had before. He did not stop for that overseer. He ran and ran and ran all the way to the edge of the river. And when he got there, he stopped and he looked and he didn't see anybody there to take him to the other side, and he didn't see a boat either. But when he looked back over his shoulder, he saw the overseer on his horse getting closer and closer and closer. So Tice did the only thing he could think to do. He did a belly flop right into that water, and he started to swim. Well, the overseer rode up to the edge of the river, jumped down off of his horse, and saw that man swimming through the water. I am not sure about this. It is possible that the overseer didn't know how to swim. Or maybe he had on a new suit of clothes that he didn't want to get wet. Or perhaps he knew how hard it would be to drag a freedom-seeking man back through the water all by himself, because that overseer did not jump into the river after Tice. Mm-mm. He tied up the horse, and he began to walk along the edge of the river, and he walked until he bumped into a bush. And when he looked down, underneath that bush, he saw a rowboat. It was just sitting there, and nobody was around, and so the overseer took that rowboat from underneath the bush, and he placed it into the river. He climbed into it, and he began to row after Tice. He did not take his eyes off Tice. He saw Tice swim to the other side of the river. He saw Tice pull his body up out of the water, and maybe that's when the overseer blinked once, or twice, or three times, because when he looked again, Tice was gone. The overseer finished rowing across the river, and he climbed out onto the riverbank, and he looked up and down and all around, but he could not find Tice anywhere. In front of him, there was a hill, and up on the hill there was a house. So the overseer went to the door, and he knocked on it. A white man came to the door. He was a minister by the name of Rankin. The overseer said, "I'm looking for a runaway slave. He looks like this. Have you seen him?" And Reverend Rankin said, "No, I haven't seen anybody who looks like that. Maybe you should try the house down the hill over that-a-way." And so the overseer went to the house down the hill over that-a-way. And those people said, "Oh, we haven't seen anybody who looks like that. Perhaps you should try the house around the bend." And when he went to the house around the bend, the people there told him to check the house up the road a piece. Oh, the people there sent that overseer from house to house to house to house, and he did not meet one person who had seen that runaway slave. Finally, the overseer gave up, and he rowed himself back across the river, and he sat with the master to explain what happened. They were having something to drink, and the overseer was acting out the parts. "Yeah, Tice jumped into the water, and he was swimming across, and I was rowing after him, and then he pulled his body up out of the water, and he disappeared. It's as if the ground opened up, and he fell onto an underground road or something." Now, I will tell you that neither of those men thought too much about what had just been said. And they certainly weren't paying attention to the fact that a slave woman was serving them their drinks. But when she heard the story of the man who got to freedom on this underground road, her heart started to dance inside. She did not change her face at all, but that night, when she got back to the slave cabin, she gathered everybody around the fire, and she told them about the man who got to freedom on the underground road. Now, you all know something about gossip, and if I tell you this story was good gossip, you might have an idea of what happened to it. That's right. Everybody who heard that story told it to somebody else. Why, that story was talked about all over the place. Now, perhaps you've also played that game telephone, and you know when a story starts one way, by the time it gets to the end, it's a little bit different. That's how it was with this story. You see, there was other stories being talked about, too. The big news was that the real trains were going across our country for the first time. Railroad tracks and train stations and tickets and passengers and conductors. And pretty soon, those two stories got mixed up. And what started out as a tale about the man who got to freedom on the underground road turned into a story about the man who rode to freedom on the underground railroad. And that's the story of how it got its name, from our history to you.
Welcome back to the Val Tutson Show. Well, no, that's already, you already have one of those. I'm Mike Mano, and sitting with Val Tutson, who is the host of a longtime television program called Cultural Tapestry, correct?
Yes, we don't do it. We don't do it now, but I did it for 12 years, 12 or 13 years.
On PBS.
It was on Cox Communications, Cox TV, yep.
And there you go. And so a lot of you are probably going, "I know that name. I know that person." And she's been telling stories around Rhode Island and all over the world, but around here, very well known, and is the organizer, or one of the organizers,
yes,
of Fundafest.
Yes, you did great. You said it absolutely correctly. Okay. Our celebration of Black storytelling, that is 26 years old this year.
And we did not give the website so that people want to check it out.
Yes, we hope that you will check it out. It's Fundafest, FUNDAFEST.org. Fundafest.org. You can see all of our performers. You can see all of our programs. You can check out everything that we're doing.
And we're going to kind of cut you short in the last segment.
That's all right.
And we had to say goodbye to Teju. He's still here in the studio with us, but he's been replaced by Danielle, who is a longtime friend and a very little known trivia fact. I don't divulge his personal information very often, but Danny was actually the best man at my wedding.
That was kind of
a mistake. My son was,
Thank you.
Well, I mean, not a mistake to have you. It was great to have you. But my son was stationed abroad, and Danny jumped in and said, I can do that. And so that's how long we've known each other, quite a while. Danny, you've been involved with Valerie for 30 years.
We've been friends.
Yeah.
A little over 30. And so I was in on the Fundafest right just about from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I've been on the committee. I drive storytellers around, whatever Val needs me to do.
She brings storytellers to the schools and all that stuff. And you've certainly seen the growth.
I have seen the growth.
In a way, you're a professional storyteller too, because you're a teacher.
That is true.
Where?
I teach in Portsmouth, Rhode Island, at the high school, and we're fortunate enough to be able to bring a storyteller to our school from the work that I do with the Funda committee.
Okay. And you've been teaching for more than 2 years?
I have been teaching for many more than 2 years.
Right. Okay. And what kind of classes do you teach?
I teach high school English.
English. Okay. See, it's not quite the same. With Teju, we would have had a whole story.
You know, and look, she's over here trying. How much do I say? You know, she says she teaches high school English, but let's just talk about, you know, how we've been able to bring Black storytellers into the schools through the work that she's done. You know, just trying to bring alternative perspectives into places that don't get it here.
Right. And I think the weekend stuff that we do, the performances that we do for the general public are absolutely fabulous. But I think one of the best things that Fundafest does is how many storytellers they are able to bring into the schools, oftentimes with grants for schools that don't have the money to bring them in. And so it is, I think it's really, really great for kids of all colors to hear these stories and to have the validation and to find out who created this stuff. And we don't get this in the history
classes. I see how you did that. Validation.
Oh, because yeah, it's Valerie.
With Valerie, right. Okay.
Lord.
And I've been friends with him for 30 years.
There you go. All right, Val, it's, like I mentioned, I cut you a little bit short in the last segment about going through the program. Why don't we pick up where we left off? And we talked about the Liars.
Yes, we talked about the Fun Liars contest, which we hope people will come to. And then our last day, we are celebrating Black History. It's actually the first weekend of Black History Month. Last year we did Black History Live, and we thought, oh, let's do that again. But we're doing it a little bit differently. We have two live performances. Sylvia Ann Soares is going to present Nancy Elizabeth Prophet, who was the first Afro-Indigenous woman to graduate from the Rhode Island School of Design. And RISD, I know, she was born in Arctic Circle, Warwick, Rhode Island, and they're going to have her first major exhibition at the RISD Museum. So this is just going to launch into that exhibition of her work. Very exciting. So,
and that was about, any idea how many years ago was that?
Well, she was an artist in the 20s, and she went to Paris in the 20s. So she was
somewhere in that area.
Yeah, around the time of the Harlem Renaissance. And I'm going to mess up stuff, so I don't... yeah, so she was an artist in the 20s, and she was in, and then she became an art professor, not here in Rhode Island, but she was a professor, and then she came back here. Excellent. So the first time to do a real exploration of her work, they've gone all over the country and found different pieces of her work, and they're pulling out the stuff that's been in storage at RISD. So it's going to be really lovely. And Sylvia is going to bring her story to life.
And Sylvia is very talented performer, actor, storyteller. and has been also
researcher
in this work for a long time and brings a lot to the table.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're doing something a little bit different. So we have Sylvia, then we're doing two film screenings. There's one on Black baseball in Rhode Island, which is called The Price of Admission. And that is going to be followed by a film done by Rochelle Garner Coleman, who's one of our RIBS founding members. And this is on Black tennis. And both of these projects were made possible with support from the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities. So we're really excited about that. The RIBS storytellers are both are highlighted in both of these films. So those will be shared and premiered at the Southside Cultural Center on February 3rd. And then wrapping up the daytime programming on that Saturday, then we're returning to a live performance. We have a beautiful artist, actor, storyteller named April Armstrong. And she's going to be here and she's going to present her one-woman show called Two Wings to Heaven, which is the life of Bessie Coleman, who is a Black female pilot. So it's going to be a great day at the Southside Cultural Center.
And Friday is free to the public. I mean, Saturday is free to the public.
Parts of it are free and parts of it are ticketed. So the films are free and then the performances are ticketed. But here's the cool thing about the ticketed performances. Most of the things are also being broadcast. So if you can't make it to the stage, you will get a link to our broadcast channel. By going to the website, fundafest.org, register for what you want, and we'll send you the links. And if you can sign up for just one show, or if you get the festival pass, I'm going to give everyone a special coupon code. Put in community and you'll get a discounted ticket if you want to buy one of those tickets.
That was a secret.
Don't tell anyone. But if you miss the live broadcast or the live performance and you're registered, you'll get the link to see the recording. So we're really excited about that. This is the second year in a row that we've done this hybrid performance, and actually able to do that with support from the Champlin Foundation, which gave us the funds to upgrade our cameras and our equipment so that we could do broadcasting live.
Now, you've mentioned a couple people that have, organizations rather, that have helped out. There are more, right?
There are. We are so grateful for the increased support from our community foundations. I mentioned the Rhode Island Foundation. They've supported a lot of what we've done over the years. And then some of the smaller foundations related to them, like the Providence Shelter for Colored Children and the Black Philanthropy Bannister Fund, as well as a community grant. We've also got support from the Pepito Opportunity Connection and Cox, and the Rhode Island Department of Education is helping us support the programming that the kids are involved with. So we're really excited about that. And of course, the Rhode Island State Council for the Arts and the Nora Roberts Foundation, AARP Rhode Island, and the United Way of Rhode Island. And I also want to give a shout out to the Brabson Foundation, because some of our programs are being captioned so that they're also accessible to people who are viewing online. And that was made possible with a grant from the Brabson Library and Educational Foundation.
There you go.
Now, oh, wait, I got one more thing.
You got more.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We weren't allowed to say it until now, but we got a grant from the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts. We got a $10,000 challenge grant. We had to keep our mouth closed until just now, but I want to give a shout out to them.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And now, with breaking news, we have a $10,000 grant. That's great.
Yes. Isn't that exciting?
From the NEA.
Right.
Yeah. Danny, what have you contributed?
I drive the storytellers
to
the schools, which is great when nobody has cars, because they come in from other places.
You haven't given a $10,000 grant?
I have not given a $10,000 grant.
She's given $10,000 worth of sweat equity over the years and moral support to me when I'm like pulling my hair out.
Well, it sounds like a great organization. Lots of things going on. I'm particularly interested in the Liars contest. so that Teju and I can go at it.
We're putting you on. Oh, wait a minute, Mike. I heard you were going mountain climbing.
I did tell you that.
He was practicing his lies.
I was practicing my lies. But the whole event sounds just wonderful, and it is a great kickoff to Black History Month, which is the entire month of February,
yes,
right?
That's right.
And things happen at other times of the year that you're involved with. This isn't a 3-week thing and you're done, right? So are there other things coming up in the spring or the summer? Or?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, we like to say we're Black all year long. We like to be a celebrator. We like to, you know, be a part of your Black History celebration, but there's only 29 days. Yeah. One of the things we're really excited about is we won a prize last year through our participation in an innovation lab, and we're going to be piloting a culturally based storytelling training program that we're calling our Legacy Training Academy, because we've been doing this a long time, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So we're looking to really train up people to continue the work that we're doing. So if folks are interested, they can go to our website, ribsfest.org, and they can sign up and they can get on the list, and we'll be piloting that program in the spring.
And that's RIBS.
Yes, FEST. .org.
Okay.
They're kind of connected, the two websites. So right. Either way,
okay.
If you go straight to the Fundafest or the Ribs Fest, you'll get information.
All right. But the Fundafest is just happening now. But
right. But this will be happening in the spring. We also, with our partnership through the Rhode Island Department of Education, have been doing the storytelling. We call it Funda Camps. So during February vacation, April vacation, and summer vacation, we offer camps for kids so that they can learn storytelling skills. They do art projects. They do African drumming and dance. And it's a really fun time. And there's information about that both on the Ride and Roll RI website and also at the Ribs website.
Excellent. And Danny, you're involved all year long also, right?
Yes, I'm involved.
Even though you're not Black all year
long. Even though I'm not Black all year or ever. The storytelling camps are great. My grandchildren go. They love it. They come home telling stories. A year later, they still remember the stories. Mm-hmm. My oldest granddaughter, Maya, actually has been on stage with Valerie telling stories. And Valerie's daughter, Joya, who is 5, is already telling stories with a beginning, middle, and end. So we're raising up these kids to pass on this culture.
Right. I think that's an important point, that this is a family event.
Absolutely.
And it's something that is something mm-hmm. for every age, right?
Yes. And our Saturday evening performances are labeled Tales for Grown Folk, because we also want adults to know that storytelling isn't just for kids, that you can go and enjoy some stories and some community and have a really, really great time.
Yeah. The final Saturday night concert will be a big celebration of that with Amina Blackwood Meeks and April Armstrong and some of the Ribs storytellers as well, just to kind of wrap things up in a really lovely way. Last weekend, we were really happy, you know, just the other night, to have the men do their hard-to-tell tales. You know, it's just not often that grown people get to sit in the company with other grown folks and listen to mm-hmm. to stories.
And have your soul fed.
Okay. Well, we're going to take this opportunity to thank Teju for coming in. I know you can't hear him on a microphone, but he's waving to the microphone. There he is. He's waving. And I know about how that adult part must go, because Teju told me a couple stories. Never mind.
Those are the after hours ones for sure.
Hours, right. And Val, thanks so much for coming in
and
bringing
Mike.
Us all this information and all that you do. And Danny, thanks to you for setting this up and getting
welcome.
Val to come back and tell us this information. And that's going to lead us to what we're going to go out with, which most of the time that I knew Danielle was involved with an organization called Coastline Show Chorus.
Yep, Coastline Show Chorus. I sang with them for many years. And our director found the song Follow the Drinking Gourd at about the same time that I first heard Valerie tell the story about Eliza. And so we performed the show as a chorus on stage, and we invited Valerie to come and tell the story, which was very, very well received. And then later, Coastline made a CD, and in the recording, two of us, myself and one of the other members, actually told the story while the song was in the background.
So we're going to hear your golden tones
on this
recording.
So you will hear my golden tones on this recording.
All right, and we'll go out with that. Thanks to all of you, and most of you, we'll see you next week on Conducting Conversations.
In the 200 years before the Civil War, the issue of slavery created great controversy in this country. In the 1830s, a group of blacks and whites together formed the Underground Railroad, a system which helped slaves get to freedom. When slaves were given the directions to freedom, they were told to follow the North Star and the Big Dipper, which they called the Drinking Gourd. This is the true story of one of those slave women, Eliza. When Eliza first overheard that her master needed money and that she would bring a good price, she knew what she had to do.
I'll run away, so I'm not sold away from my children. I'll follow the Drinking Gourd, get to freedom, and come back for them.
When Eliza got back to her cabin that night, she told her children their favorite story of Peg Leg Joe and the Drinking Gourd and the people who helped slaves get to freedom, who called themselves friends. When all was quiet in the cabin, she got ready to go.
But I can't leave the baby. She's not even 2 years old. The others I'll come back for, but the baby I'll take with me now.
She ran all night, and in the morning, exhausted, she reached a cabin. She took a chance and knocked on the door. It was opened by an old black man.
I'm a friend. Can you help me?
Of course. Come in. You'll be safe here.
Eliza slept all day and was awakened at dusk.
Eliza, quick, hurry, you've got to go. They're after you and they've got the dogs to chase you. You have to get across the river.
Eliza grabbed her baby and ran. When she got to the river, she put the baby on an ice floe and pushing it, kicked her way across the icy water. Just as she was about to give up, she heard a voice.
It's all right, take my hand, you're almost there.
When she stepped out onto the bank, she realized it was a white man who had helped her.
It's okay, I won't hurt you. I'm a friend. I can help you get to the next safe place.
Thank you. I've got to get to freedom so I can go back for the rest of my children.
Sometime later, this same man heard a knock on his door, and when he opened it, he saw what appeared to be a young black man.
It's me, Sir Eliza. I'm going back for my children now. Will you help me?
The man dressed himself up as a woman, and the two went back across the river in their disguises.
Eliza's courage and perseverance enabled her to rescue all of her children from slavery by following the light of the Drinking Gourd.
Oh, when the sun goes back and the first quail calls, follow the Drinking Gourd. For the old man's waiting for to carry you to freedom. You follow the Drinking Gourd. Oh, the river bank will make a mighty good road.
Traveler, I've been a traveler.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.